On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Caitlin Durante.
My name's Jamie Loftus.
And we are your hosts of this podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
You're damn right we are.
Hell yeah.
I'm coming from Chuck E. Cheese.
You're coming from Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
I'm not coming from there.
Well, that's on you.
I know. My bad.
I'm sorry, it's Thursday afternoon. Where the fuck
why am
else
I not
would you be?
At Chuck E. Cheese? You're right.
Grow up.
Well, we have a podcast. We talk about how women are represented and treated in film.
Cinema. Yeah.
We use the Bechdel test as just sort of a jumping off point.
Yardstick.
A yardstick. And our version of the Bechdel test requires that a movie has two female characters who speak to each other. They also have names, and their conversation has to be about something other than a man. Mm-hmm. It's really only a two-line exchange. That's all we need here at the Bechdel cast.
Hey, we're not putting you out.
No.
H. Wood. Not that difficult.
Oh, Hollywood. I see. Okay. I was like, well, H. Wood? Who's that?
I'm sorry. I'm coming from Chuck E. Cheese. I'm like full of hubris and like just have a wild energy at this time.
I ate pancakes like an hour ago, so I'm actually very tired.
Oh, nice. That's like a nap food.
Yeah.
Well, we've really established that we have pretty leisurely, chill lives. That's great. Good for us.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways.
I'm excited to talk about the movie we're talking about today because it is a polarizing film.
Yes.
In every conceivable. I was reading. Have you seen the Rotten Tomatoes page for this movie?
No, but I know that it got an F on CinemaScore.
Oh, okay. The reviews between like the positive and the negative. I mean, it's like both. Some people loved this movie. Other people like it truly made them want to walk into the sea, which is, well, we'll get to it.
Yeah. Well, that's how I felt. And I believe that's also how our guest felt, but I will let her speak for herself.
Yes.
And let us introduce her. She's an actress. You've seen her on Comedy Central's Corporate, and she's starring in a show on YouTube Red called Youth and Consequences. Anna Akana.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So you brought us the movie Mother.
Mother. Yes.
Mother, exclamation point.
Mother.
I hated it so much that I was like, I want to talk about how much I fucking hate this movie.
This is a fun, this is like my favorite kind of episode.
Yes.
Just like pull out the bloodied corpse and then just whack it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So did you see it in the theater?
I did see it in the theater. I was also mega high. So I thought I would enjoy it from that perspective at the very least, because I heard about the polarizing reviews before going in. So I was like, you know, go in with really low expectations, and it still managed to shatter those low expectations and have a whole new bar of just terrible movie. But yeah, it was 60% of the movie felt like it was just a close-up on Jennifer Lawrence.
That is, I think it was very deliberately shot that way.
And then like the last half hour is straight up biblical torture porn, and it's just God, I can't, like, as the movie goes on, I hate it more and more. Like,
yeah,
there's
sure.
no reprieve. I saw this movie very high as well, higher than I was expecting to be. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I'm like, I don't know if I just really hated that movie or if I thought I could hear everyone's skin and that was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was that kind of high. I'm like, oh, there's a bald man in front of me and I can hear his scalp. So, like, that was like...
What drug were you on? Were you on LSD?
No, it was like, I think it was like a really strong... Because I don't drug that much. Mm. So when I do...
How many units of drug did you do?
A couple. I don't too many? I don't know. But the people I was with were better at drugs than me. And so they were like having a great time hating the movie. And I was like, I can hear this man's scalp and I cannot tell anyone, least of all him.
Mm-hmm.
Although I want to tell him so bad that his skull can speak and, and is speaking and wants to get out. But the sound, for what it's worth, the sound editing in this movie is a lot.
Well, it's there.
So seeing it in theaters was definitely, I mean, it's like, did you feel trapped?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's like, it feels like you can leave, but I don't know.
It's very grating and it's, Okay.
It felt like it would never end, too. It almost felt like the movie was like, you think it's going to end here? No.
Because
I would have been, I wouldn't have been shocked at any runtime on that movie. It could have been an hour 15 or 3 hours, and it just felt like forever.
Well, because no real narrative is set up. It's just an extended metaphor, and we'll get into it. Yeah. But, like, there's no goal that any character is trying to achieve necessarily that we know about. So we don't know anything that's going to happen. Like, any event that happens, we're just like, oh, wait, what? Oh, this is happening now? Okay. Yeah. Like,
Anna, were you a fan of Darren Aronofsky going into it?
I was. I loved Black Swan. I loved Requiem for a Dream. I was excited to hear this, especially because I'd read some interviews with Jennifer Lawrence, and she was like, I thought this was a masterpiece. I loved this script. I loved his idea. And so I went in knowing, like, okay, well, I'm a fan of his work. Like, I want to be open, at least, to what's going to happen. But the moment they ate the baby, I was just like,
they
die.
Really bad. Really bad. And even Jennifer Lawrence later turns on this movie. Because when during the, I don't know like at what point it started, but I didn't realize until after I saw the movie the first time and was less high and able to Google things that she and Darren Aronofsky were like hot and heavy while this movie was being made through when it came out. And then from, and I'm sure it's not this simple, but they broke up shortly after the movie came out, partially because, and Jennifer Lawrence like sort of said this, she was just like, yeah, he like couldn't handle how much people hated Mother and he wouldn't shut up about it. So I was like, actually, I have to be going, which I thought was pretty badass of like, calm down.
Yeah.
Which you there's know. An interesting parallel of in the movie where like Javier Bardem is like, my writing, and she's like, well, what about me?
Yeah.
Except unlike her character, Jennifer Lawrence dipped immediately, which you've got to hand it to her. That's pretty good.
What? You mean you don't offer someone your weird glass heart at the end of a relationship and then become dust?
I keep thinking of that.
Shocked she did not turn to dust.
Every time I see that on screen, I want to call it the heart of the ocean, Titanic reference.
It doesn't deserve it.
It doesn't deserve it. You're right. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't feel right calling it that.
Yeah.
The only metaphor, like I'd read like some fan conspiracy theories after seeing it, because for those of you who haven't seen the movie, it's so heavy-handed in biblical references, and literally just the whole message of the movie is humans are bad, we're killing Mother Earth, we're so self-centered, and God is this like self-absorbed asshole.
Thank you, Mr. Aronofsky.
Yeah, really love your classic original viewpoint.
Hot take.
But the one that I did like is someone said, if you look at this movie through the lens of being within a abusive narcissist, it actually is good. And so like they kind of ran through the movie of like, you know, like your love is never enough for somebody and they absolutely have to have the adoration of others, and they're going to put the family second, they don't even care how much your family life is completely destroyed by your art, and so through that lens I was like, oh, that would be a much better metaphor movie than this.
Which I mean, I guess it can work on that level. I don't think that that had anything to do with the intent, which just speaks to how fucking clueless Darren Aronofsky must be, where I bet he's like, Javier Bardem, not so bad. Not too bad. Pretty smart guy. Seems cool. Seems kind of hot.
Yeah.
Has a stone, right?
Yeah.
There, God. I mean, the one good takeaway, and then I'll let you get into the recap, but the one takeaway for me is you do get to see Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer essentially raw dogging on more than one occasion, which you never see coming. And there's always like a little weird, it's kind of like in The Shape of Water where they're like, no way are they going to let us watch the fish fuck. And then you're like, oh, I guess they're just going to let us watch the fish fuck. Like they linger on Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer raw dogging.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not worth the price of admission. But one of the more interesting parts of the movie to me. And shockingly, one of the least graphic.
Yeah, of the movie at least. I do enjoy the representation of like people over 50 canoodling very sensuously.
Yeah, but it's like, I guess representation. I did not need to see it. I did not need to see, and maybe in this will not age well because I'm really giving it to bald people today, but I didn't need to see Ed Harris's bald head in coitus. I didn't. I'll say it. I didn't need it.
Well, it's. I mean, this that scene is one of many that does not serve the story. Wait, what story? There isn't one. Okay, well, so yeah, let me do the recap of Mother! Exclamation point.
Oh, yes, Anna, feel free to interrupt anytime. The recap is the most fun part.
Yeah. So, Mother! Exclamation point is about a woman who's. We don't know Jennifer Lawrence's character's name, although IMDb lists her as Mother. She is married.
Well, yeah, she goes, "I am his mother."
Yeah.
At that one point, you're like, oh, the title.
That's the name of the movie.
Fun.
So she is married to a character played by Javier Bardem, whose name we also don't know. IMDb lists him as him, I think, right?
Yeah.
Mother and him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Him, capital H.
Like that Powerpuff Girls character.
I do not know what you're referring to.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I do know. The gay devil?
Yeah. Queer icon him.
Oh, okay. I'm on board.
Good. Yeah.
So they are married and they live in a house and the entire movie takes place within this house. At first, you don't really know what's going on. And then in the rest of the movie, you don't know what's going on. But for so Mother.
It's a metaphor, Caitlin. Ugh.
So Mother, they live in a house. Javier is a poet. She is a homemaker, as far as we know. She's fixing up this house because there was a fire. And we see a glimpse of this fire in the very beginning. And then she wakes up and she's like, better go downstairs and put some shit on the wall.
Yeah. How did they meet? Doesn't serve the metaphor. We're not informed.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's a visitor at the house played by Ed Harris. He's like, hey, can I stay here? And she's like, you're a stranger. But Javier's like, yeah, come stay. It's fine.
That bugs me so much. It's like almost immediately the second the movie starts, people start behaving nothing like people.
Exactly. Yeah.
To the point where it's just like, well, then what are we supposed to be like holding on to here? Because that would never happen.
Right. The only relatable factor was Jennifer Lawrence badly wanting a baby and Javier, every time the conversation came up, pushing it off. And so you're like, okay, like they're kind of, this is a stereotype, but I at least understand it.
Yeah. So Ed Harris shows up and then his wife, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, shows up. And turns out they're kind of metaphors for Adam and Eve.
Whoa.
And then they have these two sons that show up who may or may not be Cain and Abel.
I will say that it took me into the first viewing. It took me a little while to figure out exactly what the metaphor, because I did no reading on it. Mm-hmm. And then someone in the movie theater I was in was like, oh, the Bible. And everyone was like, oh, thank you so much. Like, genuinely for me was helpful.
Yes.
Because I didn't get it in like the first.
Well, the moment when the brother killed the other brother, I was like, okay, all right now.
For me, it was the rib when Ed Harris is getting sick. And his rib is bleeding. I was like, got it.
But I was hoping it would take a sci-fi turn. And then I was like, no, it's just the Bible.
It's just the Bible.
Yeah, I don't know what turn I thought it was going to take. I thought it was just like a straight up horror movie. And like the trailers made it seem like, oh, maybe there's going to be like a visitor that like comes and fucks shit up. And they have to like fight off this intruder. But
this
like,
movie must be so hard to have made a trailer for it too.
Right.
It's like, it was all whispering over black.
Yeah. What else are you going to do?
They were like, just get people in with the intrigue because no one's going to want to see this.
Right. So the sons show up and one of them murders the other one. So then this is kind of when all hell breaks loose and more people start showing up. And Jennifer Lawrence is like, hey, wait, you can't be here. This is my house.
How many times did Jennifer Lawrence in the movie go,
Hey, don't do that.
You can't sit there.
Stop.
Hey,
the sink isn't braced. Get down from there.
There's so much. She's like, that's like the lowest level active you can possibly be. It's like she's saying it and she knows no one's going to listen to her. But she's like, well, I get, hey.
So things calm down because she's like, get out of here. There's like a funeral sort of thing that happens for the dead,
for the
murdered
son. Which one is... Oh, God, I'm going to say his name wrong. Domhnall Gleeson. The cute one.
Yeah. And then the other Gleeson plays his brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And no, there's more than one Gleeson.
There's two Gleesons.
I'm learning.
And is their dad the other Gleeson?
What?
Is in Paddington 2?
Don't even tell me there's a third Gleeson. I'll pass out.
Okay, anyway. Okay, so things calm down, and she's like, oh, I want a baby, but you won't even fuck me. And he's like, yeah, I will. And then they have sex.
Weird scene.
And then we'll get to that.
Yeah.
And then suddenly she wakes up and she's like, I'm pregnant. I just know that I am. And then this inspires him, aka God,
to start writing the New Testament. Gotta get started.
So he gets started and it's like this beautiful masterpiece. And then his publisher calls and she's like, oh my God, it's great.
The twist is it's Kristen Wiig for some reason.
Who is like wigging out in this movie.
She's wigging.
So then a whole new horde of people show up. And they're like, oh my God, God, you did such a great thing. We love you. More chaos breaks loose. And Jennifer Lawrence says, hey, you can't be in here.
Stop.
And then comes to a head.
Like, she gives birth in public.
She gives birth. Well, she's in a room, but then her baby immediately gets stolen and eaten.
Passed around. Ripped limb from limb and eaten by now the fans who are in robes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's also a rave happening in the corner. Yeah.
There's a rave.
There's like executions.
People have guns. Yeah. It's like.
And God's like, it's fine that they ate our baby. Like, they love me. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Also, so I think most people agree that Jennifer Lawrence's character is a metaphor for Mother Earth.
Right.
So, like, all these people showing up is ruining
no respect
her
for
and her
Mother
home.
Earth.
Yeah.
They're breaking her sink.
It's
not braced. That was one of my favorite lines in the movie. Excuse me, that's not braced. It's like, Jennifer Lawrence, come on.
Because she spends most of the movie trying to fix up this house, and then people come and fuck it all up. So there's the metaphor where humans are just fucking up Mother Earth. So at the very, very end, she goes from being all like, hey, to hey. And she like basically lights the whole house on fire. She's all burnt up and she's all fucked up and everyone's like dead. And then God carries her and he's like, oh no, what have I done? And she's like, I have nothing left to give. And then he reaches into her abdomen and pulls out a la The Fifth Element when Bruce Willis's character takes some stones out of the opera singer. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. No?
No.
He takes out the heart of the ocean, this crystal from her, and then I guess it resets time. It fixes the house.
And then now there's a new woman.
And
she goes, baby?
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 So,
God, this movie is so annoying.
That's the story, if you can call it that.
Yeah.
So it's an extended metaphor. It's allegorical.
It's the laziest screenwriting I've ever seen.
Well, he wrote best left in the Evernote is my review of this movie. Like,
I was reading an interview with Darren Aronofsky, and he said that
Greg. Didn't he write the draft in like a day or something?
He said 5 days.
Oh my God.
And it shows.
Yeah.
I feel like every time someone is bragging about how quickly they wrote something, and then you see it, you're just like, yeah, maybe do a second draft of this.
Take a little time.
Yeah, like, what was the rush to make Mother happen? Like, it's not an urgent piece of anything.
Mm-hmm.
5 days. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
So, as far as the treatment of the female characters goes, I don't even know where to start. Because this movie is such a heavy allegory, you could say, well, like, she's personifying Mother Earth, and Mother Earth is, you know, just a place. She can't be that active. But then why bother making a movie where your main character can't be active? Because the whole movie is her reacting to stuff. She does not play an active role in pretty much anything. Decisions are made. Javier Bardem's always like calling the shots, inviting people in, not running anything by her. And then she just has to keep being like, wait a minute. Hey, you can't do that. You can't be here. So it's her being completely reactionary. So even though she's the protagonist, she has no specific goal in the story, and she except to, I guess, be a mother. And that's sort of hinted at every now and then.
Right.
She wants children, and she wants to like be fixing up this house, but it's nothing that specific. And she's not active in the pursuit of any goal. So she's just reacting to all the things that are happening, which is one of the reasons this movie might not be very good.
Yeah.
So you have a very passive protagonist until like literally the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Right, and at which point her goal just changes to like, either survive and then failing that to like, you know, wipe everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, it's not fun to watch. And it's like there's almost every point when we were watching this movie together, there's no real moment with this character that you can't counterpoint with, like, oh, but how would the metaphor work if that didn't? But I feel like that just speaks to the fact that it then don't tell that story.
Yeah, right. It should have been a short film. It would have been a beautiful short film. Mm-hmm. But also, like, the running time of this movie was like, what, 2.5 hours or something?
Two hours.
It did not need to be that fucking long.
No. It was very long. I mean, the closest, I think that, like, the gaslighting between Javier Bardem and Jennifer Lawrence, there are parts of that that are very interesting, and like his avoidance is interesting, and there's, I mean, a number of scenes where she's like, hey, this is wrong, and he's like, what are you talking about? No, it's not. Everything's great. Anyways, make toast. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, okay, that there's some sort of, but even that is like barely paid off. And paid off on isn't even the word. I think my favorite scene in this movie, even though it happens as the movie's getting exceptionally bad, but like the scene that worked for me was the scene where Javier Bardem steals the baby. That was like the part of the movie where I felt like the most, like my blood pressure was extremely high. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I don't know, that was like the moment for me where Jennifer Lawrence's character felt most motivated and most threatened and like most able to control the situation. And you have such anxiety of like, he's going to take the baby. He's going to take the baby the second she falls asleep. And then she falls asleep and then he takes the baby. And then things get really bad. Mm-hmm. They eat the baby.
They eat the baby.
But they like break its neck first.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do to a fucking baby. And they do it.
Very bad. Very bad.
It's one of those weird things where I don't regret watching the movie, but I never want to see it again.
I saw it twice now, and it was even more painful the second time around. So, okay, so there's things about it that I'm like, okay, like you said, if you sort of look at it through the lens of it being an abusive relationship, there's maybe some things to take away from it. I think there's also some things to take away if you sort of examine it from, he's supposed to be God.
Yeah.
She is Mother Earth. But I think you could also make an argument for her being just sort of like a metaphor for just like womanhood in general. Like if he's the patriarchy-ish sort of thing, mm-hmm. like
her whole world is strictly domestic.
It is.
Right.
And I guess if you look at it like that, you could argue that the movie kind of makes a comment on how no one takes her seriously. No one listens to her. She's mistreated.
She's there to serve, and it's
bad. And right. And then she retaliates and sort of like there's like some sort of catharsis there.
I don't know. I was thinking that too. But
is
then
reaching maybe.
Well, because then in the end, she still offers up the very last thing she has, which is her weird crystal heart. And you're like, okay.
She never takes something for herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I was thinking that too before I had figured out the Bible thing when I was seeing it the first time and I was like listening to this man's head. but at the beginning I was like, okay, there's some sort of gender commentary happening. But then Michelle Pfeiffer's character comes in and is just as awful.
That's true.
If not worse to Jennifer Lawrence's character. And I was like, okay, so maybe that's not what is trying to be said here, because the second woman we see on screen is just as dismissive and mean.
Yeah, that's
in a way that feels, if you don't recognize the stupid fucking metaphor, like most of what Michelle Pfeiffer does especially feels crazy unmotivated of just like, why are you being mean? Why are you asking this woman about her sex life? Like,
you're
why
in
are
her
you...
home.
Yeah.
Right, right. Like, why are you getting drunk? Like, what?
She's drinking a Mike's Hard Lemonade, though.
She is drinking a Mike's Hard Lemonade, but it's Michelle's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my God.
We femmed it up,
of course.
But it's weird. I really enjoyed Michelle Pfeiffer's performance in this movie because I feel like she was possibly one of the only actors who knew that she was kind of in a campy movie. Because I feel like she gives a kind of campy performance because she's like always like draping herself over a piece of furniture and is like, so tell me everything. And you're like, okay, relax. But I don't know. Like it's. And also, like, this movie could have been more fun if it had a more campy tone.
Yeah.
But there's no fun.
It takes itself extremely seriously.
Yes.
And it makes it for not a fun watch. Like, it is nothing entertaining about this movie.
And I think, like, the whole message of the movie is almost so immature and juvenile. Like, a thought that we all have when we're, like, 13 of, like, oh, we're bacteria, man. We're ruining the earth. Like, yeah. Oh, man. Like, so it's like, what exactly motivated you to make something that's saying something that everybody has already thought and, like, kind of dismissed?
Right. And, it, like, right.
Like, yeah, who is the intended audience for this? Who's supposed to be learning something?
Right. And what are we even supposed to take away apart from, like, the very obvious, like, yeah, we're fucking up the earth. But then, like, because it's a metaphor for Old Testament and then New Testament, but then also, like, God is married to Mother Earth. Like, her character doesn't really fit into that allegory.
Because they make the house almost is Mother Earth. Because that's what they're destroying.
Yeah.
So you're like, you're trying, he's like doing metaphor hats on metaphor hats.
Yeah, it's like too many layers and none of it really works out. Especially because so many of the characters in this movie behave in ways that people do not behave. So fine if you want to make a movie that's an allegory for something. For example, Paddington 1. It's an allegory for immigration and racism. And it's done very well.
Uh-huh.
But Mother! Exclamation point is like all these metaphors mashed up together in a way that like none of it makes sense. None of it works.
Yeah. It's
characters are like doing things that no one would do ever and behaving in ways that no one would ever behave.
It's literally like UCB 101 shit.
Yeah.
Of like you have to map something on something else that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't make sense, find something different to, you know, fit it into. You can't just make something, like, it's just so forced. The whole thing is so forced. And I think that he tried to possibly, I'm curious what you think, that Jennifer Lawrence was a metaphor for Earth, but so was the house. Mm-hmm. And they both sort of had a weird pulsing something where the house had a womb in the basement.
But then also, you like, she would touch the walls and then there would be like a heartbeat.
They were connected somehow. I was like, it just didn't quite make sense. I think that, but I'm like, what is the takeaway from that? She is the house? What?
Also, the movie seems to be saying that religion destroyed Mother Earth, which like...
What was Kristen Wiig supposed to represent?
I don't know.
What was she a metaphor for?
See, I
have no idea.
Like popular religion or something?
Maybe. I've never read the Bible. Brag. So I did not pick up on the Bible
metaphor. I can't stop reading the Bible.
I didn't pick up on it the first time I saw it. I watched the whole thing and I was like, what the fuck? I was like, I know there's a metaphor here. I just don't know what it is. I started reading about it and I was like, oh, it's a Bible thing.
Right.
And then I was like, because I'm not super familiar with the various stories of the Bible. I didn't pick up on it.
They're not great.
But I also,
kind of a dry read.
But now that I know it, I was like, oh, yes, this movie does bash you over the head with all these metaphors. But also, I don't know.
Well, that's something that we were talking about, too. Of like, it really bothers me. And this is part of why, like, some David Lynch movies don't do it for me at all. Of just like, I don't like when you go into a movie and it's like, whoever made this wants me to feel dumb as rocks for at least part of it. And I don't like that. Like, it's not a good feeling.
It's a very pretentious movie as well, which really, it was like, it felt like I was being condescended to the entire time.
I felt
that
the whole time. Yeah. I was like, the same thing happens to me when I watch, like, I watched Eraserhead and I'm just like, what am I supposed to be getting from this? What does this mean? Ugh. I don't like feeling stupid.
It's kind of interesting how a director and his script can just be so condescending and dumb at the same time.
Right.
You're like, wow, this is a feat. You should get an award for this.
Because Mother also reads as like a short story that someone in ninth grade who's like a little subversive would have written.
Right.
Like, oh, it's a text
it's
in
ninth
house,
grade English.
But it's a metaphor.
And then they eat the baby.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I'm sure my brother's film school friends are frothing over this.
Yes.
They're like, oh my God, he's a genius. It's interesting because I feel like, you know, Aronofsky is like whatever this male auteur. Ever heard of a male auteur? They exist almost exclusively. Who chose to have a female protagonist and chose to do nothing with her. That really bothers me and I feel like sets a false precedent of... you know, I'm sure, you know, and unless he's more woke than I give him credit for, that Aronofsky would look at this and be like, female protagonist, so I'm a feminist icon. I did it. I did it because she's there and I don't photograph her like she's porn. And I did it. You see her face. I did, like, and right. that just, that bugs me so much because I feel like that just it lets future directors get away with A, being like, a man can have a female protagonist, so let's just let men direct all the movies. and also, it's like, that character, Jennifer Lawrence's character, that person doesn't exist. That person's never, doesn't I mean, exist. None of these characters have ever, it's just, ugh, I mean, it, that bugs me, and then it's just bad writing.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, she's reacting to things that happen, but she's not driving the story forward. Things are happening around her and she's reacting to them. And she is putting up, she's protesting sometimes, but almost never in a way that it actually gets results or anything happens because of a choice she makes. Like, she's right. just reacting to the things that are happening around her.
She never alters her approach.
No, that either.
Her approach is universally, hey, stop.
Hey, stop that. Which, like, again, because she's personifying Mother Earth, you could maybe argue, well, the Earth doesn't fight back, but actually it doesn't, like, deliberately, the Earth is never, like, making a conscious choice to be like, oh, well, you did this thing to me, I'm gonna fucking have a hurricane on you.
Yeah.
But it's just so weird to make the choice to personify something like that, but also, like, that character just rendering her so passive is like, what's the point? Why even tell a story? If you want to make a movie about people and how they've fucked up the Earth, watch Koyana Scotsi. It's a weird experimental movie from the early 80s, but it does a better job getting this message across. Anyway, shout out to all my Koyana Scotsi heads out there.
Wow, really flexing that master's degree today, Durante. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I think the problem was, A, he wrote it way too quickly and was so passionate about it and had the resources to make a film immediately that he probably spent no time actually thinking about it or putting it in the drawer and waiting on it for a couple months.
Right.
I mean, in a lot of the interviews, I know you haven't read them, but he's so fucking psyched on this. He's like, you know, because we ruin Mother Earth with climate change and we do all these and we're drilling into her and then all the and overpopulation. And you're like, oh, wow. Like, you, this is a little passion project for you. You think you're being so hashtag deep. Yeah, I think he didn't take the time that he should have to really evaluate this movie.
Yeah. I mean, just in general, like, the more famous filmmakers and writers get, the more they should, like, make sure the people around them are being honest with them before they start something. Because I'm sure that, you know, most famous people have enough yes men around them to be like, yeah, real hack, biblical metaphor, love it, amazing, great. But, yeah, I mean, that sucks if you genuinely, I mean, and it sounds like he genuinely didn't know how, like, juvenile and silly it was, because perhaps no one said, hi.
Excuse me.
This is dumb.
Hey! Stop that, Darren!
The sink isn't braced, Darren!
Stop writing that script, Darren! Your script needs another draft, Darren! Hey!
And then he's like, too late, I'm printing it.
She's like, no!
And then they eat the baby.
can we talk about the scene where, so it starts with Ed Harris and all those people have left, and she's like, my life didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. You talk about wanting to have kids, but you won't even fuck me. And then he, like, lunges at her and is, like, grabbing her and kissing her. And she is very vocally and physically resisting. She's saying, no, no, stop. And she's fighting back. She's trying to push him off, and he keeps doing it. He continues. And then it changes from her resisting to her being into it suddenly, which I think sends a very dangerous message. And I think this is another hint that this is a movie with a female protagonist, but directed by a man. It sends a dangerous message.
We see this all the time.
All the time. There's a really good...
Blade Runner is the one I always go straight to. Like, resist, resist, resist. And now she loves you.
Yeah.
Like,
it happens in, like, Empire Strikes Back, too, with Han Solo trying to come on to Leia. Pop Culture Detective has a really great video essay about this, about how a lot of movies will paint this scene of a man kind of aggressively coming on to a woman. She is resisting.
Right.
But then something happens all of a sudden because he keeps trying, and then suddenly she's into it and she thinks it's hot. And
what you are not mentioning is that every single character that this video essay explores is a Harrison Ford character. Harrison Ford, you're fired. You're on notice.
Yeah.
Wow, predatory icon, yeah. Harrison Ford.
He did not write those scenes.
But he accepted single role and check.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it was more acceptable back in the day. Like, Say Anything was this huge romantic gesture. And it's like, if a fucker was outside of your house blasting music, you would be like, leave me alone. I'm getting a restraining
order. Call the cops.
Right.
Yeah.
Call the cops. I was thinking about that recently because I live on the first floor. So if someone did that to me, it would be extra crazy because I'd just be like making direct eye contact with them. I'd be like, ooh. Like, gross.
But yeah, so many movies have done this and continue to do this where it's basically what starts out as a rape scene and then it turns into this romantic thing where all of a sudden she's very hot because he just kept persisting and suddenly she's into it. So it basically sends a message. It's like, men, if a woman is resisting at first, just keep trying. Try a little harder and then she'll be into it.
I mean, granted, at this point in the movie, if any man is watching Javier Bardem and is like, wow, seems like a good example to be following, they're already lost. But but the way this movie's attitude towards sex in general is very bizarro. Of like, this movie seems like anti-sex in a lot of ways, because anytime that Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer are going at it, they're like, the movie I felt was like,
gross, like, that's a weird thing they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's this weirdly violent sex scene and then them having sex, whatever, God and Earth.
You know, when fucking God volcano.
God fucks a planet. Such a bad metaphor. But so, and then when they have sex, it results in disaster because it results in the baby and the baby getting fucked up.
It's a disaster because of like God's hubris and like wanting to be loved by his followers and basically sacrificing the baby because of that. And
this movie is stupid. It's just like, sometimes I have a bunch of bullet points. I'm like, do we even tackle it? Is there any point?
My notes are also so the narrative
is
like, what is
Kristen Wiig doing in this movie? Like, that was straight up distracting. I'm like, every time she would show up every once in a while, you'd be like, oh yeah, wait, what?
And then she magically turns into like a military person in the basement and they're all at war and bombs are going off. And you're like, what the fuck?
This is a bad thesis film.
It's not great. Can we talk about, I guess, the relationship between Jennifer Lawrence's character and Michelle Pfeiffer a little bit? Because that's relevant to our discussion.
I mean, it does, you know. Well, we'll get into, does anyone have names and therefore can it ever pass the Bechdel test?
Right, yeah. So, but there's a sequence where Jenla and Michelle talk, and it's usually Michelle Pfeiffer like prying about her sex life or sort of judging her for other choices that she's making, and
everything she does is wrong.
Right.
Is the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. She like makes all these backhanded remarks like, yeah, no, he probably still loves you. Like, yeah, your husband, I guess, maybe likes you. And do you want some of my Michelle's Hard Lemonade? It's a family recipe. And later on, when she returns after like the random murder that happens in the house, like, ugh.
Oh, yeah. Which leads to feminist icon Floor Vagina. When the floor of the house just has a vagina all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it grows.
It's bleeding. It's free bleeding all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Feminist icon Floor Vagina.
Also feminist icon Ed Harris, whenever he at one point is like, Jennifer Lawrence, you redid this whole house? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, every detail? And she's like, mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, so you're not just a pretty face. Feminist icon Ed Harris.
Wow. God.
Just kidding. So the relationship, Michelle Pfeiffer and Jennifer Lawrence are just like a very bizarre situation where no strangers would talk like that. And I mean,
mostly on Michelle Pfeiffer's part where she's just like, why do you do your laundry so fucked up? What is this? What is this? I'm drunk. Blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, whoa, like, what do you want? Like, it's unclear to me outside of the metaphor. Mm-hmm. What Michelle Pfeiffer, why she's being so antagonistic and what kind of reaction she's hoping to get out of Jennifer Lawrence. Like, it doesn't...
Well, they're all just... Yeah, they're all props for the metaphor. They literally don't make sense or don't exist outside of it.
Well, I mean, again, I have a very limited understanding of the Bible, but it's Eve who takes the bite of the apple. Yeah. That's like the original sin thing, and that's basically the fall of man.
She's temptation. She's belligerent. She didn't listen. Mm. It's like the whole idea of Eve.
Why emulate that in a fucking current movie? Like, that's not how...
Don't know. Like,
it's just so stupid.
So stupid. There, one of the things about Jennifer Lawrence's character, and it's like, I feel like this whole time we're like, ugh, like we're really, really reaching for things here. But the idea of the female protagonist trying to be polite and like a good hostess and respectful to all at all costs was something that was like, okay, there was another moment during Kristen Wiig's press conference. You know, when Kristen Wiig just starts having a press conference during this terrible movie, when there's like a mom and her son, and she, Jennifer Lawrence, is like trying to be like, you cannot come in. She's like, but my son's pissing. And she's like, okay, fine, you can come in, but you have to leave. And then it turns out everyone's pissing for some reason.
Right.
I was like peeing in her sink. Anyways, I thought I had a point, but it turns out I didn't.
I mean, maybe it's kind of what I was touching on earlier, where if this, maybe this character is a metaphor for like the way women have historically been treated, where, you know, we're conditioned to be accommodating and we have to be helpful and delicate and all of this stuff, and how that's not really serving anybody, and like that's not good and that's not how it should be. But like, I don't think that Darren Aronofsky was necessarily thinking that. Like, I think that's
I don't think he was thinking that at all.
But it is like, it is so infuriating to see the only things you see Jennifer Lawrence's character doing is either cleaning stuff up or making breakfast or fixing up the house or just like endless domestic chores, doing laundry
and
cleaning up a mess. We touched on this a little earlier, but I did want to mention like how the female protagonist is framed in this movie.
Yes.
And that like almost every shot is either a close up of her face or a shot of from her, like an over the shoulder or just a straight up point of view shot from her perspective, which I think is, I guess you could call it interesting. It's unusual. It's not what we usually see in most movies, especially because most movies are not told from a woman's point of view.
Like, and this one is, yeah, literally her point of view. It's like a point of view shot from, I mean, it's kind of, I guess, kind of an even split of looking at her and looking from her point of view.
But. Right. So, I mean, maybe something I can take away from this movie is, okay, that's interesting that that choice was made. Because often, if it's a male director framing a female character, it's usually sexualized in some way. Or like, and I never felt
You get to see her sheer nightgown a couple times.
You do. You see.
I mean, they do have that scene where all the people are attacking her on the floor, and like her boob comes out, and they're like grabbing.
Which, like, why? What is that serving? Why is that scene in the movie?
Can you imagine being in a room with your boyfriend and he's like, hit her.
Yeah, just lie down on the ground.
You want to grab her tit. I was like, no.
Yeah, how did he direct
that
scene?
Scarf.
He's like, hey, Jennifer, just lie here on the floor and get your face beaten in by all of these extras.
For my awesome freaking movie. You're going to love it. Mother.
Well, I almost felt like I could see the male gaze on Jennifer Lawrence the whole movie because she was completely perfect the entire time. Like, she never got more in disarray as the movie went on until that very, very ending section. But even then, like, when she was running around, her hair was perfectly in place. Like, all the shots were, like, so close and intimate and, like, this gorgeous lighting. So it didn't feel, like, sexualized, but it felt like Darren's way of viewing her almost.
That's a
really good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. It's too bad because I don't think this movie got nominated for every Razzie, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I think it got the most nominations for any movie this year. And it's too bad because I don't think Jennifer Lawrence does a bad job in this movie with what she's given, which is not a lot.
No.
If 70% of the dialogue you're given is, hey, like, there's only so much you can do. And given the fact that the camera is focused on her for so much of the movie, I feel like she and, like, Michelle Pfeiffer, I felt like, did at least an interesting job with what they were given. Mm-hmm. Javier Bardem, I don't know. I was like not loving him in this movie. Kristen Wiig, what are you doing here? Ed Harris, I'm maybe like afraid of bald men sometimes. So I don't have a good gauge.
You're a fan of bald women. Bald
women are in charge every single time they appear on screen. Bald men, their scalps can talk. And they have really scary secrets to tell you.
I mean, one of the huge problems this movie boils down to, because the director was like, we gotta have this metaphor, it's at the expense of characterization. So none of these characters feel like real people. Mm. And therefore, it's kind of hard to talk about them. So like before we started recording, I was like, what am I even going to say about this movie? Like, how can I even talk about the female characters? Anyone. Because they're like, they're not real people. They don't resemble human behavior at all. So it's just like, how do you even talk about the portrayal of women when these female characters, they're just like metaphors and allegories and personifications of the shit. And
no one's relationship makes sense. We don't know. There's very little evidence about like why Javier Bardem and Jennifer Lawrence would love each other in this relationship. What keeps their relationship together other than her constant service? One of the more baffling character connections was like Ed Harris showing up and Javier Bardem just being like, I love this guy. And that and that goes through every single time. Ed Harris is like, I've been lying. And Javier Bardem's like, you're so fucking real. Like, and they're weirdly...
I like, guess it's because like...
Because God loved...
Those were his creations. So he loved them. And he's like, wow, look what a good job I did with all this stuff. And I guess the movie's saying, oh no, God didn't maybe do a good job because everything got fucked up by the end.
Aronofsky, second draft. Come on. Come on.
It would have been great to see the third, fourth, 52nd draft.
Yeah. Or maybe.
And I think that would have ended in the trash.
Yeah.
If anyone had taken a good, long, hard look at what this movie is, like, maybe skip it.
He should have sent his script to me for notes. I would have given him great notes. Does anyone have any other thoughts about the portrayal of women?
I don't want to give this movie two more seconds.
All right. Well, how about we talk about whether or not the movie passes the Bechdel test?
I'm going to say no.
I would say no, too.
Because the characters aren't named?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If they had names, it would have to pass, I'm pretty sure, because of the scenes with Jennifer Lawrence and Michelle Pfeiffer. But they don't have names. No matter what the IMDb page says. Sometimes the IMDb page says, hey, the twist is they did have a name. But we'd never find out what it is.
We never find out in the movie.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I'd be more inclined to give it a benefit of the doubt if we knew, like, well, at least we knew a lot about the characters. But we didn't know anything about the fucking characters either. So.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to, not to come to this movie's defense at all, but I'm going to argue that the caveat of the characters having to have names implies that, oh, these characters have to be important enough that we would know their name. So it can't just be like a random person we see in one scene that has one line. And if that character talks to another woman with a name, like, I think that's what that caveat of the Bechdel test is saying. So it's like it has to be two main characters speaking to each other. So these are two main characters in the movie. So the fact that they don't have names, I think, is just like whatever choice.
The fact that they don't have names isn't a gendered decision because no one has names.
Correct.
But the Bechdel test is extremely flawed and I don't.
Right. So it doesn't.
I still don't think it passes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with saying it doesn't because of the name caveat. Because otherwise, I mean, let's say they do have names.
Then it does.
Those two characters, they talk about Mike's Hard Lemonade. They talk about...
Michelle Pfeiffer is like, you suck. And Jennifer Lawrence is like, sorry.
And a lot of what they talk about are, like, domestic chores. And again, that's a lot of what you see Jennifer Lawrence's character doing in the movie. Mm-hmm. But they are talking about things... They do mention men, but there are plenty of two-line exchanges between those two characters that would pass the test if we knew their names.
I don't want to give anyone a reason to be like, maybe I'll give this movie a chance.
Yeah, I'm not going to... I think I won't give it a pass just because... They don't have names in this movie. It sucks really bad. And
fuck it.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
In conclusion,
fuck it.
Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale. 0 to 5 nipples, where we rate the movie.
That's a lot of nipples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Based on its portrayal of women.
I'm going to go -2 nipples.
Ooh. Excellent.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give it a zero just because of how inactive the protagonist is, how the relationship with the one other main female character is just like bonkers and doesn't make any sense. But the movie isn't like pro-man either. That's the thing. It's not like, wow, look how good of a job men are doing.
This movie isn't even it's not specifically insensitive to women in a pointed way. It's just insensitive to filmmaking and things that are good. A slap in the face to anything that's ever been good.
Yeah. And then even at the end when she sort of has her like, oh, actually, I do have a little tiny bit of agency and I'm going to blow the whole house up. And then she dies and then gets reborn into this other woman. So she doesn't even get to, like, have a cathartic moment that she actually gets to, like, enjoy and, like, reap the benefits of. Because then she just dies. And then it's the whole thing of, like, oh, well, God gets to start over because he's God.
I give this movie zero nipples, but I give it one floor vagina. There's no way around it.
Great. That'll do it for our discussion about Mother. Anna, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Where can people follow you online?
It's just my name, Anna Akana.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Twitter, Instagram, check it out.
All the stuff.
You can go to our website, Bechdelcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and all the places. You can buy our merch.
We've got merch now.
Stickers and buttons.
Hot merch alert.
Where you can make those purchases on our website.
Yeah.
You can subscribe to our Patreon. It's $5 a month. You get 2 bonus episodes. It helps us out. It helps you out. It's a win-win.
You can't lose.
All right, well, what a rousing discussion about Mother.
Guys, we did not like this movie.
Oh, no. All right, well, bye.
Bye.